Yeah. Thanks, everybody, for coming on board. And you've got a few really good questions that have come through. And, yeah, just been away. And I'm going away again. I've just had my time at home, my 6 weeks to have a bit of time at home, get some jobs done. And I did do a little clinic run, two clinics down at Canberra and Gunnedah. And I'm just back, but then I'm going to fly out to go up to the Sunshine Coast and then head down to Melbourne and then across to WA. If everything goes well, I'll be so far so good with the corona. Things are settling down, so yeah, I should be able to make it into all the states. So yeah, but anyway, got a few questions to get through tonight, and some really good ones here. So first of all, M. Tilden, thank you for the great clinic at Pegasus. I really enjoyed it and learned a lot. That's great, Em. I'm glad. You know, I was able to help you with your mare. It's the best thing about this job, I guess, is being able to help. I get a lot of satisfaction and enjoyment out of seeing people and their horses in a real tricky spot and being able to sort of help them through. So yeah, I'm glad for it. And yeah, sometimes I feel like I'm. When some people are in an office, you know, working away, I feel that I'm a bit blessed to be able to go out and help out the animals and help out the people. So that's really good. My question is, how do I stop my young filly pawing at everything, particularly when she's shut in the yard? She'll bang the yard rails or she'll bang the shed wall. When she's eating her dinner, she'll paw the ground constantly. She's done it pretty much since she was born. She's 2 and a half now. I've tried to ignore it, but it really annoys me and I'm worried she'll break a leg. Yeah, it's an interesting thing, all that sort of pawing when they're eating and stuff like that. And it's hard to know how, you know, I think some things are set up in horses. And most of my life, like before training horses and that sort of thing, the horses I was dealing with, you know, when I was growing up as a kid and even the horses we breed here, are horses that don't suffer from that anxiety because they sort of grow up knowing that the feed's there and they're in their herd. And I know that if I separated one of our horses and took the others away, that they'd stress and panic and there would be that process of understanding. So in a scenario where a horse leaves a mob, I'm going to sort of, you know, give you a bit of a scenario idea. So if a horse is used to a mob and you take it away from that mob, there's kind of like that graded exposure time where you might just like weaning horses or weaning cattle or anything like that, is you're not just going to sort of throw them in the deep end and expect them to survive. Some horses are really good at thinking and coping in situations. Others can get very, very reactive and stressed. But I'm not so sure on the whole question, as in this is what's happening. But I'm guessing that, you know, if you take her away to feed her or do something, she's away from something, and that's why she's thinking, oh, you know, I know I have to eat, but I've got to be somewhere else or something like that. And horses that are commonly being fed, they, you know, and in between food, there's you know, I don't know all the other in-betweens in this, but the pawing when she's eating, I mean, technically it shouldn't be that bad. She's going to break a leg because she's only pawing when eating, but something you can sort of maybe do is... I'm guessing you're putting her in to feed her and then you're taking her out. And so you can either have the other horses that she's with closer to her when she's eating. Something I would do, we like in all the horses, and Dad used to get a lot of horses from sales and that sort of thing, and that obviously had different lives and stuff, and we used to nosebag all our horses, and some would paw her a bit, but they got used to feeding around the other horses and having their own food, and they weren't taken away from anything. So something you can do, and something that's a good thing, is start to get your horses used to nosebags, because nose bags, you know, they can carry them around, they can be with the other horses, they figure it out, and they know where their food is. Because if she's getting taken away from the horses, it could cause a certain amount of anxiety, and she wants the food, she knows she wants to eat it, but at the same time she's kind of stressed eating it, and she might rush eat and pour and things like that because she's maybe a little anxious because she's away from the others. So some way I would think of feeding her is, you know, maybe having a setup so the others feed close and stuff like that. Because she's shut in the yards, like it says, particularly when she's shut in the yards. So she's shut in the yards, she's stressed in that confined space, the other horses are over here, and it's probably being shut away, and also being shut in the yards, she's out of her familiar environment. So it's the anxiety that's causing the pouring and things like that, not necessarily eating or stuff. So, I mean, you can't just fix that in a sense of give her some particular lesson, you know, like let's tie her foot up when she paws and stuff like that. You can always, you know, there's always ways to train something out of a horse, but if you just train a particular thing out of a horse, what happens is, you know, that's why we get shut down horses and things like that, is because the anxiety wasn't treated, the situation wasn't treated. We just taught them not to do that. Now, I'm, as you know from doing the clinic, I'm big on alternatives. Instead of just always changing everything for the horse, we offer them alternative, because that's training. And as I said, listening is part of the agreement, but it's not training. Training's training, and listening's listening. So, but I would say try and set it up so you can have some sort of way that she's getting food, but she's not getting locked up in the yards for it. And maybe when she's in the yards, you might bring some other horses in. Or the problem with any kind of rated exposure is you're gonna, it's more time consuming for you, but so the training is, you know, tying the horse to the tree of patience until it digs a hole 10 feet deep is not always the answer if that horse needs some way of, if he can't self-regulate, you've got to have some way in training to gently bring it in, you know, expose it to something slowly until it can deal with it and have the coping mechanisms. So I'm thinking you've got to, you know, one way, as I said, nose bags, just have the horses, bring them in, feed them with nose bags so she's not pouring at the feed. And then what I would tend to do is I would bring all the horses in the yards and out a few times and get her travelling through the yards. So first of all, the yards have got to be a good place so that she can come through the yards with the other horses, spend some time in the yards with her friends and stuff, and I would have them all yarded. You know, if there's one particular horse that doesn't like the confined spaces and causes a lot of, you know, pushing and shoving and things like that, well, be very careful. But have her in the yard so you know she's familiar with the yards with the other horses. And then if you got yards there, I would tend to have a couple other horses in while you put her in another particular yard so they're close for her feeding. If you can't nose bag them, the other thing is nose bag them all, feed them together, that sort of thing. I think the issue of the food and the pouring of the food's not the food, and it's the being in a foreign environment without her friends. So the other thing is get her used to the yards by doing that with the other horses, but then you can bring her in and then take her out. Bring her in again, take her out. You could bring her in and give her some food while you're standing there so she knows there's a connect. If you've got a connection, and at the clinic you would have started to understand that once a horse can think towards you, take its mind off the other things, it gets a bit of a connection. You can stay with her a little while she eats and then eats a little bit. Before she gets too stressed, you can take her out, okay? And in and out again, but don't have the horses like way up over there while she's in, okay? So there is a reason, there's something in there, like I'm just reading the question over and over again. It's become a sort of a habit that she comes in and she eats and goes out, and I think it's more common in horses that you know, have their allocated food, but then in between there's not a lot of food. So the other thing, I'm not saying that you haven't got that, because I'm not sure. This is more like I'm just kind of guessing this at the moment. But, you know, it's very important, and even horse with laminitis and things like that, just you have a slow hay feeder or something, or there's grass out there, so they're not sort of very hungry when they come in. So if they need their minerals and the extra food, they can come in and have it, but they've got access to food all the time. So in their day-to-day life, in and out of the yards, there's access to food. And I, you know, there's all these ways to set up things, but, you know, I would sort of set it up so maybe she has to come in and out of the yards for food and it's always there. But if you know, obviously you've got other horses, you can't always do that. So if there's other horses, then you set up some slow feeder that it's just a hay feeder that they can all come in and eat and go out. That's if you don't have a lot of feed out in the paddocks. So there's a constant coming into the yards and out to eat. The food's there, it's available. They can, you know, it's not going to run out. They can eat it. There's no stress involved, and they go away. But yeah, when it comes to coming to her small feeds, that, you know, the special ration foods, if she's had access to that other food, there's horses around her when she comes in. Let her eat, and just let it be part of the thing that there's other horses around, and I think if there's more food available, that might be quelled. Otherwise, you know, I'm not so sure how to fix that particular habit, in the sense of not knowing all the intricacies, as in, you know, she's been brought up like this, she was weaned like this, and things like that. So for me, my gut feeling is she's in a space, she's slightly claustrophobic in, possibly her company's somewhere else, her safe place is somewhere else, she's a little stressed in there, and that's the reason. So as I say, rated exposure, you grade that exposure, get her in and out. And then the other thing is the company, so she's not so stressed in there. But yeah, thanks. But yeah, Em, if you sort of think about it a bit more, and just you know, the situation, how she is in the paddock, how much food you got on the ground, a few of those little things, and maybe let us know in a fortnight where we can might be able to sort of look into that question a little bit more, and you know, think about, you know, how we can help her. But thanks very much for that question, Tony. Yeah, Tony, I've read through your question, and what I'm going to say is, if you do get the gelding scarring thing done, that's great. I've saw the bit of banter throughout that question. I'm not going to answer the question, because I think I'll be going over the same things that I've spoke to you about and also answered before. I think. Yeah, the way I seen your horse understand education, he took it on normally, and he accepted normally when he was here when we were working him, and he made good significant improvement. If you've been sort of sticking to that, and he kind of went good, because I know a little while ago he was going good, and then suddenly it eroded, and suddenly he's you know, tapping out like he is, like you say, then. For sure, before I go too deep into this, and sort of I'm only going to be answering the question with possibilities, but gelding scarring, I've met the lady who does it, and on all accounts, what I've sort of looked into on it and what I've heard about it, it's a really good thing to sort of try and do, because there are a lot of geldings, especially you know, well, it's a gelding scarring thing, isn't it? So there's a lot of geldings that are suffering when they don't have to suffer because of it. So for people who don't know about the gelding scarring, it's basically when a horse is castrated. So obviously there's a big sort of wound that's been made, and when that it kind of, I guess, the scarring, once it sucks back up inside the body, as it's healing, there's that scar tip, that scarring, and it kind of spider webs, I guess, and attaches itself and it sticks things that are supposed to move inside the horse, and it sticks it together and causes it not to to move freely as the horse is moving, and can cause a lot of pain. So what happens is you go in through the inside the rectum right in, and that becomes a glove, and you sort of use that to sort of free up the scarring inside the horse. And yeah, all counts, it sounds like it's a really good thing and would be good to look into. But if there's any other sorenesses in there, the horse he is, I know there's a certain side of it that's mental, but to see the mental change in him when he was here and then to sort of see the soreness, you know, to see the mental change in him, I know he's accepting mentally to help and understanding things, and I think he can soak it up. So, yeah, look into physical things if there's something that kind of causes pain, because once you get a certain amount of trust, you're ridden more, there could be something that starts to hurt or something like that, and that could trigger that fear, which he has, but you still have to fix it from two spectrums. So basically you've got to fix it from the educational spectrum and the physical spectrum, but I'm not going to talk more on the education. Look more into the physical, and then I think I might personally talk to you if you could contact me, and I'll have a yarn to you about it. You can give me some more ideas, and we'll kind of, you know, I guess this is where sort of, you know, lessons or clinics or even just talking to you, toing and froing, would help. So I'm not going to sort of give you sort of a blank answer on him. Tracy, hi Mark, I finally subscribed and working my way through your float loading videos, as it's my main issue at the moment. New float finally arrived, and it turns out neither of my horses are too keen on it. Maybe it's just this flash new paint that smells, which is understandable. It's bigger and darker than the older one. Well, darker is always a thing, and you know, so I always like the open windows sort of floats. They always seem easy for horses to go into. My question is regarding how do you deal with a horse that won't go straight when unloading? My old boy has a very bad habit of either backing off to the side of the ramp or getting down it as far enough to get his body past the center divider and then swinging his front end around to sticky beak at everything outside the float. I think going over the step forward, step back, to do in your float loading videos might help, but in case it doesn't. Okay, so a lot of horses, because the float is a bad place, they don't want to commit their thoughts in there. So it's almost got like they're kind of like going, well, if I wasn't here, I'd be over there, and I want to be over there. And so obviously if their thoughts are sort of more dominant to be out their right eye, for instance, or everything where your float's always parked, there's always more of their comfortable place on that right side, well, obviously they're going to move their hips out like that to walk out like that, or move their shoulders across when they get to a certain point. Basically, if I'm loading a horse that has problems, unloading it has problems, especially one that won't acknowledge a float, think in a horse float, I will distract them and bring their thoughts centered to the horse float. So, and I would probably keep doing that until he can hold his thoughts. So sometimes with horses like that that have been on and off, but they're still getting crooked every time they get off, is you just get them centered and you say, you know, at the ramp center, think in towards me in a straight line, and you do your backing and forwarding and backing and forwarding. It's a bit hard to explain on you know, question and answer, but the backing and forwarding part of it, you can, I when I'm leaning backwards and forwards, I'll just keep walking them backwards and forwards and putting a feel on them and a bit of a bend on them, and that would help their hips move back over, straighten up when they're going backwards and forwards. And if they go crooked, I just keep walking them backwards and forwards, and I'll just keep putting an inside feel and a bend as I'm walking them backwards and forwards until their hindquarter comes around. I'm not going to go get a big long arm or stick and bump them over. from behind, I'm going to just use a bit of feel. So they learn to straighten out through the feel, and it also helps them a lot more when they're, you know, going to back off and they're tied up or anything like that, because you've really got them really listening to that lead rope. So that's one way. It's not just one way. It's just one of the things that I do in getting a horse to straighten out when it's going in and out of a horse float. So so as I'm backing, and that inside feel makes an indirect pressure which moves the hips back over. But it also, what I'm doing is not just thinking move the hips over. I'm thinking about bringing the thoughts away from out there back into my hand and what I'm asking you, and then I'm going to stop and I'm going to give you some space to think about the horse float and while your thoughts are forward. So for horses also that are really thinking out the back really strong or out to the side, they're always going to move around to plan their escape sort of thing, or plan their departure, and that's why they move off to the side a little. So those horses, I might have the flag or something, or, you know, bang my leg or bang the float or something, whatever, just to bring their thoughts back towards the place that I want them to think towards. And if I see them get distracted and their thoughts slip out one eye or the other, I know that's going to lead to them getting crooked in the feet. So I'll just say, hey, back here, back to the float, back to the thing you're trying to block out. It's like a horse that's trying to shut you out. It's the same as, you know, getting a horse to focus on you. It's just getting the focus in this area, because that's where you need their thoughts to be, to think about walking on that float softly and carefully. So, yeah, you just keep, you know, distracting him, bringing his thoughts back to it, and that'll straighten his mind out. And wherever the mind is, the feet will arrange themselves to be. Think of it like that. You don't worry about the feet and where they are in that evasion. You say, well, I know your mind's out there, because that's why your feet's making arrangements. The other thing you do when you back off, so it's just good for everybody to get into a habit with their young horses, to when you've finally got your horse loading and unloading, excuse me, you back off and you're back in a straight line. So you go back, and instead of sort of, you know, what a lot of people do is they back down the ramp and they get to the point and they walk off in a direction which is usually the same. Sometimes we're quite biased to leading a horse off to one side, and we tend to lead a horse more to that side than the other. And you know, it could be that right side, you stand on the near side eye and you walk off. But a lot of times we back a horse off and then we just walk off. And the horses are actually starting to prepare for that while they're still on the float. So they actually get crooked while they're backing off, purely because they're preparing for how we're going to walk away. So that's also something to think about when you're, you know, putting your horse on and off the horse float. So, yeah, focus towards the horse float. That's really the most important thing. People get a little confused when they see me bang the rope or flag on the roof of the float, because they think, oh, you're just going to make the float more scary. And I'm going, no, this horse is blocking it out. It's scared of the float, that's why it's blocking it out. Bring his thoughts towards it, and then letting it reset and think towards the float is going to make it try and understand it. And that's very important. So, yeah, I hope that helps you in that, Tracy. Pat, hi, Mark. First off, I have to say, I believe all things happen for a reason. How I found you, I proof of that. If you're curious, PM me sometime. I have pondered my question for several years. This sounds like an interesting question. I know you have the answer. Well, I don't know. I have a mare I started 7 years ago and used the one rein stop incorrectly, scaring her and making her anxious. I spend the better part of using a bend to a stop when she gets anxious and starts to run off. This only happens at a lope. At first, I thought I could control her by teaching her all the moves, shoulder in, out, in and out, hindquarters in and out, and a combination of the above. Problem is, all is well at the walk, trot, but falls apart at the lope. Here's the deal. I can walk, trot, and lope like a pleasure horse, drape reins, very low headed, feels awesome. The lope goes to crap when I pick up both reins, anxiety comes into play and the reins mean nothing. One theory is just letting them go and they'll figure it out, and in, as in, don't stop a horse till they want to stop. And they figure out stopping and air is a really good thing. I haven't tried that. Been doing lots of transitions. I've spent hours, days and months on how to and how my plan for 2021. I'm in my second week of focus work. She's shut down. I just stand with her and use what I've learned from you so far. I can see supple changes. My next step is to teach her the slow, medium walk, fast walk, up and down. That's as far as I've got. I spent hours a day standing next to her, directing her thought process on and off me. Wow, sorry, this was so wordy. This is a reigning bred mare, and to me, quite, and my partner and I screwed it up. Now I'm going to unscrew it. Thanks for being part of my journey. Okay, Pat. Firstly, I'm going to go through things with you. Treat her like she's not yours. I'm not saying like a car you stole. First of all, and it sounds like you've got the patience and commitment, maybe not even to need this advice, but it's the advice I give everyone when they come to a clinic. I can be the best person I can be for everybody else's horses, probably better than I can for my own, because at a clinic I'm neutral, completely neutral, which means I turn up, somebody hands me a horse or hands me their problems, but it's not my problems. I'm just here to help. So, and the horses feel that. So what I say to you is, somebody loaned you this horse. And so what that does is every day you go out, you say, God, this horse that they loaned me is a little tricky, but I'm going to really try and help her. And then you're not carrying the weight of everything, the past behind you. And that's the biggest, you know, burden that everyone carries when they've sort of brought a horse along themselves, bred a horse, all that sort of thing. The thing I see quite commonly is they're not as helpful as they could be because they're carrying the baggage of the past with them, and that creates its own anxiety in the person. And it also, you know, some people aren't as patient. All those things is because there's a past in there, and there's a past, and they don't open their mind up and just really sit back and sort of ponder on where the horse is right now, because where the horse is right now is the most important thing, not what's happened, where it is right now. I'm going to talk through the past to the present because it's good educational value to know that why we do and why we don't do things. But for you, you walk out to that horse. I mean, Alzheimer's is a sickness that people get, and eventually it gets to a stage it affects so many other things. But sometimes it'd be nice just to have a small amount of Alzheimer's when you're out with your horses. So, I mean, it's great to remember what happened the day before so you can sort of, you know, have an idea where you're going the next day. But sometimes I say to people, remember, you know, Alzheimer's is short, you know, the first start of it might be short-term memory loss. I'm not a guru in Alzheimer's, but I'm just going to say if your Alzheimer's was like this, it's just short-term memory loss. That wouldn't be such a bad thing, because it'd be great to be able to walk into a horse each day and go, oh, g'day, never seen you before. Let's get started, and just walk up like that and forget what happened the day before. Because once you start to read horses and know, you don't need the information from the day before, because as soon as you walk up, yeah, put a little feel on them and you start to know where they're at. So you just make up the new day as you go without having to carry the baggage of yesterday behind you all the time. But it's yesterday that makes us learn. But it's just a sort of, you know, a funny thing that I sort of talk about that tries to gets people just to sort of let go of yesterday and more so the whole past. So I'm going to start talking. You've obviously watched my subscription if you're on it. One rein stop. Okay, I think I have the answer to some of your horses' anxiety, because it's a common anxiety that I have at clinics. And just finishing Gundagai Clinic, there's a lady that's been to, she's been to a few of my clinics with another horse, and she's been to a few of my clinics with this particular new horse. She spent some money, bought a nice horse. Thought she'd just go, this is going to be my easy horse, but I believe the new horse came with more trouble than her old horse, who she's been working on, who's you know, better the devil you know kind of thing. But anyway, this horse has rein anxiety and other anxiety too, leg anxiety, rein anxiety, lots of things. Now, focus work, okay, I noticed you say, I don't have a program in focus work, so I just want my horse's thoughts to come towards me. The focus work I do is not necessarily just to stand with the horse and let it just lick and chew and rest and just rest with me and lay down. I want to know the horse is with me for a reason. Most of these shutdown horses and horses that are troubled by tools, I come across people who've done focus work and stuff like that, and they've tapped into relaxation and stuff, but the horse is still troubled by pressure around people, pressure that reins supply, pressure that legs supply, pressure that seat supplies. And seat, people think, why would a horse be scared of your seat? Well, it's a pathway to your legs. So if your legs weren't working properly, and you know, your horse knew that every time you shifted your seat, you might kick it in the belly with a spur. Well, that's anxious to your seat then, and you know, and the story goes on. But anyway, I'm getting off track there. But first of all, with a horse that suffers with rein anxiety, and I'm going to treat it as rein anxiety because you said here it lopes on a loose rein. It's when you pick up the reins, the horse gets nervous. And yeah, you can ride around all day. Like if you come to one of my clinics, you'll probably get the feeling that I don't just let the horses ride around on a loose rein till they relax, because one, well, yes, I'm running in the clinic in a fancy sand arena because, you know, I hire a venue to run a clinic. But a lot of my clients and me myself don't have a fenced arena that you can just let a horse go in. They're going to walk out the gate somewhere or find an outlet, and they're going to, you know, ping off somewhere. So I spent the better part of my professional riding career riding unhandled, troubled horses, wild horses, with a little tiny round yard. And I had to go out that gate and into the back of beyond and help my horses. So I guess I learnt to, you know, I could only let a horse go in the round yard, but then I had to make sure by the time I got out, everything was working okay. When people come to clinics and they've got a horse that's anxious, I could probably let them bounce around the arena for a while and not touch the horse until the horse relaxes. But the horse is only sometimes relaxing because it's letting its guard down. What I mean by that is the horse is going, oh, they're not going to grab me with the reins all the time. And then they relax and then they start to go, oh, I trust this person. But then if that person uses pressure in a way that horse remembers anxiety or tenses up to, what ends up happening is the horse suddenly gets anxious as soon as you touch the reins in a certain way. I try and help horses out of the red zone through the reins, because I think it's very important that you can touch a rein when the horse is anxious and the horse goes, okay, I'm not understanding this. Oh, I found that. And then they find it and they actually relax a little and they threw the rein, opposed to not touching the reins, letting them relax, and then saying, now I'm going to teach you to follow the reins. Each way does have a positive and can work, but I tend to try and get people to hold the reins in the right way and use them in the right way to take a brace out of a horse. I mean, hence why, you know, even circling a horse, you know, to relaxation. But so the one rein stop makes them anxious because it shuts them down, sort of traps their feet, stops their feet. And then you've been, you know, you've talked to you about shoulder in and all that. How did you do your shoulder in? Did you do it with the legs or the reins? If you're doing the shoulder in and moving the haunches and shoulders around, all that, with your legs and the reins, then chances are your leg was moving the shoulders over, but you would have had to firm up on the reins a little more to stop all the energy that was pushing from the legs. So if you were going to do all those movements, I would have probably done those movements just through the reins as much as you can, okay? so the horse learns to loosen up and take the brace out through the whole body. But I'm going to go back to basic steering. Okay, so bending to a stop. So you've the one rein stop panic, and bending to a stop is kind of like, it's okay, but it's not really teaching the horse what it needs to know to get truly balanced in the rein. So thinking with the rein is important, but not, you know, you want a horse to think with the rein, but you don't want it to just look around over here and be out of balance in its feet, okay? Because some horses will look with the rein, but they don't have it what it takes to fix it and rebalance. Now, the reason why horses get anxious in the reins is because a lot of them are mentally out of balance, which means their thoughts are somewhere else. The reins have been like a bit of a trap, so they panic a little, which makes them sometimes go, or sometimes puts a brace in them, and then they won't rebalance. So what I start with is can you think and rebalance, not just can you think to the left or right, because bending to a stop could entail the horse thinking around to the left, and then bending to a stop, and when it's stopped, its thoughts are back on you. I don't really bend a horse all the way around to bring its thoughts back on me. I sit on a horse and I just take its thought away from where it was. I don't get them to think back towards me, because they usually do that when you back them up. They think back through you. But it's when you loosen the reins after you've done something that the horse is thinking on you, going, yep, because you've changed my thought and my awareness is here, not over there. So once upon a time, when I first started to understand a horse's thoughts, I would have probably bent them around a little more and got their thoughts to me, thinking that was the answer. But no, that's not the answer. The horse thinks to you. When you've taken away a hard thought, you've released that hard thought through the rein. The horse doesn't have to think right back on you. It's just got to, it'll think, but it will come back to you in a certain way because you've taken away that outside thought. Hope I don't get too much confusion here. So what I'd encourage you to do is quit the bending to a stop. It may only teach your horse to stay out of balance. What I mean by that is, if she can lope around, how balanced is she when she lopes? When you pick up on the reins, you know, because letting a horse go on a loose rein, it may not speed up, but it may be still not cantering how you'd like it. And you know, so if you see someone do a video where this horse just goes around a loose rein and suddenly loosens up in the top line and just lopes and canters along and it's nice and collected, well, chances are that horse was more inclined to be one of those high kind of anxious horses that's really tight, and then it just goes, oh, not necessarily one of those kind of on their forehand, more shut down type horses that, you know, just poke along. Okay, it's one of those up there horses. They're the ones that kind of sometimes look collected on a loose rein, but the ones that I've seen that have been on their shoulders all their life, just chugging along and then panicking a bit, those ones don't just, they need to learn how to carry themselves through a lot of development, not just relax, you know, because sometimes they still stay on their shoulders. So what I would say is, when you pick up the rein in a standstill, make sure she thinks, rebalances, and walks off with the rein. And I would just go back to square one and say, this is how you steer, this is how you balance. I'm picking up a rein, I'm picking up your thoughts, I want you to think and step. Now, rebalancing is not just walking off over there with a bend on the forehand, okay? If she's just walking off thinking over there on the forehand, then I would encourage her possibly to rock back and rebalance again and try and step out strong with an inside front foot, thoughts inside front foot, which means she has to take charge and loosen up a forward thought, come back a little and then just step over. Now, you can do that from a back up and then a step over, but sometimes you can just do it in a rein by saying, when she goes to walk forward, you just pick up the rein just against the jaw, but just back a little and just say, don't push. And then she'll loosen up and go, don't push. And then you'll say, when she goes, well, I might try something else, you just say, let's just look, loosen in the jaw, loosen in the thoughts, lift the wither, step over there, and fully teach her how to balance. So you're teaching her that when you touch a rein, no matter which rein it is, she has to prepare with awareness and make all her forefeet available. Now, if she's not doing that, then basically she may be not steering properly. And if a horse thinks that the reins are putting them out of balance, then they're going to stress and they're going to get troubled. They're going to get hot, all these things, especially at the canter. The walk and trot, they can cope. But once they're at the canter, if they're like, well, they're just going to speed up and run through that shoulder or just get all panicked. So I wouldn't be loose reining her. I would be touching the reins all the time and getting her to connect. Think when she's backing, are you thinking backwards? Are you lifting and thinking backwards? Are you just walking out over here? And she's got to be independent of the reins and legs. You shouldn't have to move her shoulders over with an outside leg. You shouldn't have to move that hip over with an inside leg. You should be able to just pick up a feel of a rein, and if it's an indirect pressure, she knows how to softly rebalance. The reason horses stay panicked in the reins is because they don't have the ability or the understanding to rebalance when their head is in an awkward position. And if they got all 4 feet kind of pushing forward and their head to the left, anything like that, that will cause stress and anxiety because it's got the horse out of balance. So think of it like us. When we're really flowy and walking or anything like that, we're just thinking over here, thinking over there, flowing, going this way, and we don't stay out of balance very long. If we look at someone, we can step over there, we can do that, but it's not normal for us in normal movement and walking around and doing things to be over here and over there doing that. We're kind of always, following our thoughts, and then our body and our shoulders and our core and everything is realigning all the time to stay in balance. And that's what I think of a horse's head. When I touch that rein, I want to know that the horse is ready and loose all through the body just to rebalance. So wherever I put that rein, whether it be indirect pressure or anything like that, the horse is confident enough that any one of those feet are loose and available. Now, I had a conversation with another trainer who's a really nice bloke, and he trains on the same spectrum and understands. He knows Harry Whitney, he knows Ross Jacobs, he knows that theory of guiding a horse's thoughts and things like that and not driving horses. And we were having a conversation, and I was talking to him about when I used to hook onto a horse's thoughts, sometimes I was wanting their thoughts to change and then the thoughts would rebalance the horse. But what I realised is some horses that have been so crooked all their life and so out of balance that you can get them looking and interested somewhere, but as soon as you put energy to that movement, they just forfeit the thought, go back to thinking straight and just go, well, I'm balanced like this. I'm just going to go like this. So, and that's where arranging their balance first and then guiding their thoughts is important for those ingrained out of balance horses that are on their forehand all the time. So on those ones, I want them to rebalance, and then chances are they're more interested at taking the thoughts stronger to the left or the right or something like that. So by the sounds of it, your horse needs a lot of natural loose hindquarter yields, natural loose forequarter yields, just following the feel of the rein, until there's not one area you can position that rein that she can't find a way how to keep herself in balance. And there shouldn't be any stuck spots where she gets one foot stuck on the ground, locks up here or anything like that. And unfortunately, bending to a stop's just a sort of a exercise. It's just one little thing that sometimes puts them out of balance. So so I would say, get her so confident that she can rebalance with the reins in any way, whether that's gathering up two reins and backing her up and things like that, that basically there is no trouble. And then I would start to work her back up again. And it's going to be a bit of a long process, because the undoing, if you start it with a horse that's already naturally a bit balanced and interested, then they pick it up straight away. Whereas if you kind of put them out of balance, and then that's what they've known, and they mentally get more out of balance because they're carrying anxiety and their thoughts are kind of going, well, my mind's going to be where I was safe, then it's harder. But anyway, that's the journey I think you need to take. The focus work's all going to be good and all that sort of stuff, but the reality of what you want when you're riding is she's got to know where she's, and that will open her up, because to truly rebalance, a horse has to think. It has to be thinking. And that's where, you know, you pick up the float and the reins and the horse floats and loosens. That's what you're feeling for. So, yeah, sorry for the long-winded answer, but it's quite a fascinating subject and something I'm quite fond of. Karen, hi, Mark. I have a draft cross who is being very difficult to the point of rearing when getting on to a walk-on, walk-off float. My question is, could it be because she was led off the same float through the wrong door, or just her not wanting to get on? She wasn't too bad getting on before this happened. Horses get used to what they know, and they will be scared of what they don't know. So, yeah, you can have a nice big sort of float that's this type of float, and they're used to this, and they'll be fine. And then you take them to a new thing, and they go, oh. Okay, but the truth of it is when a horse does that, you kind of know that some of the tools aren't working. So tools are education, okay? There'll be a stage that a horse is really soft that it will lead anywhere and kind of put up with it because it knows that you've never let it anything to, you know, into danger. But a horse float is danger because you don't just lead it there and come out with it. You lead it there, put it in there, get in your car and drive off, and that leaves the horse there. So, yeah, the horse, you've sort of, that's one area that's where the horse can lose a lot of trust in us, because it's one area where you leave him in something that's actually really scary and that they don't understand. So basically I'd go back to the leading and all that sort of thing. The things that she, you know, I'd actually walk her back into pressure. I'd sometimes put a bit of worry in front of her, and if that pushes her back into the lead and then she blocks and can't walk up because she's worried about what's in front of her. So for instance, you might just wave a flag in front of her, she'll push back and she'll go, nah, not coming forward. Well, you kind of know that you've got to fix the leading a bit more. So that's something you can do away from the horse float. You can just test the leading in different areas and things like that. If she can push back into that lead with something anxious in front of her or something she's anxious about, and then step forward and go, oh, it didn't kill me, but I will override my anxiety and worry by following a feel. And the feel, hopefully, the way you train it in the early stages, leads them to a better feeling. So eventually they follow the feel regardless of what's happening to them around them. So that's your work on its own. You can use a flag. The horse float's always good for it because it makes them push back. But sometimes the horse's float is so static and still, the horse just goes, oh, you know where that is, and I'm just going to lean and I'm going to shut down the pressure. So if it's like that, then you know, it might put something in front of them that goes like that, and they go, oh, no, I'm awake now, and then they'll step up to that lead, take the pressure off, and I'll let them come forward and follow a feel towards something that they're anxious about. And that's setting them up to lead towards something they're anxious about, but no matter how anxious they are, their mind goes towards the question, not necessarily to the escape route. Okay, so that's something I'd work on away from the float. Because rearing means lack of leading. So I'd say all that you work on away from the float. Before you get to the new float, you know, you can work on a horse's threshold, and it's good on a nervous horse that's never seen a horse float before, and let them build their confidence up with the float, then walk on. But there's also another part in that, that's you listening to the horse, and then because you listen to it, the horse slowly gets closer to the float and goes on. But there's times there where you need the horse to be anxious about something and be able to think about it while it's anxious, go, oh, I've just thought about it and I've stepped on it and stepped off it while I'm anxious. That's also good. And sometimes if you just bring them to the threshold and back them off, they don't get to experience what it's like to be in the deep end following a feel. So, yeah. I know there's a few people having sound problems. I think it all should be okay. I'm not sure how to check the sounds. I'll keep talking now. So basically she's got to follow a feel under a little bit of pressure, because that's where it really sort of where it works. Okay, so opposed to her old float, where I'm used to that horse float, I'll just load on that until the cows come home. But under pressure, I'm not. I'm so so yeah. So that really tests your leading, and you go back and you fix those skills. So then bring it back to that horse float. Get it thinking about the field before you take it to the horse float, and following up, backing off, following up, backing off. The other thing I'd watch closely for is when she's close to that new horse float, does she just tap out? Okay, what point does she tap out? So I'd walk her up, and this way you're sort of thinking about that threshold. Walk up, monitoring her, and if she just starts to tap out, just say, think forward, wait here. When she thinks towards what she's worried about, then you back her off, and then you go up again. And lots of little backwards and forwards near the float. So she's going, okay, I'm thinking with you, I'm thinking backwards, I'm thinking forwards. And she's not thinking about what she doesn't want to go on. She's more thinking about, as she's walking up the float, how she's leading in your hand, because you've worked on that, you've got it soft, and you're keeping on working on it, getting her centered with you. Then you stop at the float and stand back and just let her think about the horse float. And then, once again, backwards and forwards. And if her attention goes off the float, bring it back towards the float until she's stepping on and off that float, like, no problems at all. But yeah, I'd tend to sort of fix the leading, and then go back to treating it as a new horse float until she gets a little better. So yeah. But that's it for all the questions today. Thank you, everybody. And I will see you. Now it's all just cut out. I will see you next time in 2 weeks. See you later.